It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as you probably just heard, the weather again on this Saturday morning is absolutely stunning. It looks like there's going to be a perfect week following up on it. And Adam just came in from the run that he has been talking about out in Nocatee this morning, and boy, did they get a good one.
Yeah, we sure did, and narrowly avoided a police chase, apparently.
Yeah, timing's everything. Something going on at Davis Park. So figure out what that is before too long. But nothing good can come of that. That's the one thing we know. Anyway, we're not going to sit here and follow the police scanner when we have, for the first time in a long time, some really good news.
Yeah, it was.
You know how I try to beat around and talk a bunch and delay until I can't delay any longer talking about the market?
You don't want to do that.
Not this time.
Not today. Yeah, in the history of Fed weeks, this was by far the best Fed week that I can remember.
You and me.
It just doesn't get any better than that. This is, I didn't do the research to look at every Fed week in history, but I wouldn't be surprised if this was in the top two. It was that good.
Nope. Wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Normally, the best thing that you can hope for out of a Fed week is a big up day and a big down day, or those two might be reversed, but you just don't see a week where all 5 days are big up days, and that's what happened. So I am as shocked as anyone, although we have been saying it, the market, I know it's a cliche, but it's so true that I have to repeat it. The market climbs a wall of worry, because last week we were looking at just a dismal scenario where inflation's out of control, war in the Middle East, you've got the dollar strengthening, you've got oil prices hovering between 80 and climbing to 100, and just all sorts of negative trends. Just really not a great scenario.
And it was all true.
Yeah. And then this week, it's all gone. Well, I can't say it's all gone, but the market acted like it was all gone.
Yep.
And all three indexes went up more than 5%. We haven't said that since 2022. And the Dow was up 5.1, and that was the lowest of the three.
Yeah.
The S&P was 5.9, and the NASDAQ was up 6.6. So just a really remarkable week.
I saw a lot of red numbers disappear this morning when I was wrapping things up.
Yep, exactly. I don't know how much of the narrative this week is actually true. Is inflation really at a comfortable level? We don't need to do any more rate hikes. Maybe. I mean, I'd put that at 50-50.
It's plausible.
It's plausible. Is the situation in the Middle East resolved? Absolutely not. But the Israel market was up over 10% this week. So clearly there's a lot more optimism than there was. And it's just, I don't know what else to say. It was a crazy week that was unexpected, but we're really thankful that it happened. Another funny thing, the small cap index actually outperformed the large cap indexes. And I really do not remember the last time I said that.
Nope.
It was up, the Russell 2000 was up 7.6%. So not just outperformed, but pretty significantly outperformed, especially on the Dow. And all the value indexes outperformed the growth indexes, also a bit of a surprise. Inside the S&P 500, financials had the best week, gaining 7.4%, while communication services and consumer discretionary both added more than 7%. The energy sector lagged. It was up only, quote unquote, 2.4%.
Yeah.
While consumer staples and healthcare were up less than 3.5%. You know it's a good week when your worst performing sectors are up 2% and 3%. The commodities index took a bit of a hit this week, fell about 1.3%, and largely due to oil falling about 4.5%. And it's trading right around the 80 mark again. It really seems to like that $80 mark right now.
It's a trampoline every time it touches down on 80, boom, it comes back up.
I feel like if it breaks that, you might get a bit of relief on gas prices for the rest of the year at least. But that would be subject to breaking that $80 mark. We'll see if that happens. Gold shed less than 1% this week. Silver had a very small gain, and agricultural commodities were actually up 1.5%. The fixed income market had a really big week. Rates fell pretty dramatically towards the end of the week. The 10-year started the week over 4.8% and ended the week around 4.5%. So that's a pretty big move on a 10-year treasury to happen in just a few days. This drove TLT, the long treasury ETF, up 4.2% for the week, and the overall bond market was up closer to 2%. That's a welcome relief, too, after last quarter where we saw the bond market down almost equal to what the equities markets were.
Yep.
Internationally, it was a big week, too. I mentioned Israel was up over 10%. They were the big winner. Mexico was up over 9%, though. Italy and Japan and Canada were all up over 7%. Even China was positive this week, which hasn't been very often lately, although it showed just a 2.2% gain, and that was the lowest in the world that I could find. That's a good week, too, when you're the lowest index in the world that you can find is up 2.2%. Emerging markets gained 5.3% this week, and the all-world index, except the U.S., was up 5.8%. Part of the reason it was a big week in the market was bad economic data. I know that sounds weird, but it's true. The jobs report came in lower than expected at 150,000 new jobs, with revisions down of 101,000 over the last 2 months. The unemployment rate ticked up to 3.9. The JOLTS report also showed that there were still plenty of job openings out there, but it's in the middle of a pretty steep downtrend, and layoffs are up, hiring is down, and quits are down. All of those are negative signals about the future of the employment in the U.S. The key here is for the job market to find some sort of equilibrium between employers and job seekers, instead of one side having too much power, as has been the case over the last couple of years, with employees or people looking for jobs really holding all the cards and employers just scrambling to find qualified people to fill positions that they had open. It seems like that's coming into balance. The danger is if that overshoots, that's what happens in a recession where there just aren't jobs available, and that becomes a real problem, especially in this consumer-driven economy that we're in today.
My final my final note to myself this morning was, for their next trick, the Fed will try to keep from suffering a Fed-imposed recession.
Right.
And it's one that may already be too far along to stop.
It doesn't feel like it is, but it's really hard to say. But
if they pull this off, it's a first.
It would be a first, yeah. Powell would probably go down as the greatest Fed chair in history.
Exactly. And wouldn't that be ironic?
That would be.
That's like the tallest midget theory.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate him. He annoys me, but his job is one that it's impossible not to do that.
Yeah, I've had to admit a few times that I wouldn't trade him places for the world. He's given the impossible. All right, we've got to take a quick break. Much more on the other side. We'll look at all the jobs and that sort of thing. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the lines are open. 904-222-8255. We have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. Going to talk about money, because, you know, this is a show about money. So let's talk about an even better part of money, like free money. What percentage of Americans have unclaimed money? And as soon as anybody gets it right, or maybe sooner, I'll tell you all the places you can go looking for it.
And by unclaimed money, you mean like old 401ks that may have even...
Dividend checks that didn't get forwarded. And there's just all kinds of ways to do that.
Okay.
So what percentage of Americans have money out there? And by the way, there's a lot of it sitting out there. And there's billions of dollars just in unclaimed savings bond.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is a lot of money.
I just had one more point to wrap up on the market wrap here and earnings season. One of the reasons that the market went up this week was not just the bad economic data. It was earnings are looking a little bit better than they were. We've now seen 1,100 companies report, just over 1,100. And so far, 71% have beat on earnings. That's a pretty strong number, much better than it was last week. And then revenue beat rates are at 60%. And that's also better than it was last week. So both of those are looking pretty good. Guidance still relatively weak. Not surprising.
But not negative.
Right. But it's also not surprising considering the economic backdrop that we're looking at. There's a lot of uncertainty out there. And if I'm issuing forward guidance, I'd probably note the uncertainty and not, I wouldn't be putting out stretch goals for my company over the next year, because that, I don't think it's realistic to think, it's not out of the realm of possibility you could get there, but it's not the most likely scenario.
No, but you know what the penalty is. If a CEO comes through a little too optimistic, it's very bad for your stock price. It's very bad for the SEC looking at you and things like that. And your shareholders don't really like you much either. And let's face it, if you're running a Fortune 500 company or something in that range, being liked is a lot better than being disliked, just to put it mildly.
Yeah, the incentive is to under-promise and over-deliver.
Yeah. You don't want to be too far off in any direction, but you certainly don't want to go overboard. A couple more little things. I always try to look underneath the jobs number and see what's going on. So we start on Wednesdays, the first Wednesday of the month, and ADP comes out with their private payroll survey. And that was 113,000. Okay, that's... You know, it's not too hot, not too cold, sort of a Goldilocks number, given the conditions that the Fed is under right now. So then we moved on to the Bureau of Labor Statistics that gets released on Friday. They do two. They do the establishment survey, where they call big companies and random sample them. And then they also release a second report on the household survey, where they call households in America and sample that. Well, the first one, the headline number is the 150,000 Adam was talking about. And that, to me, that and ADP were correlated much to my satisfaction. I tend to look at those two being that close and say, well, that's pretty believable, because a small sampling error causes a few thousand one way or the other. But then you go to the household survey, and instead of 100 or 150,000, it was negative. And it wasn't just negative a little bit. It was negative almost 350,000 jobs. They also issue a report called the CES Birth-Death Report. It's the current employment situation. Birth-death doesn't relate to people. I explained this once in a while, but it's been a while since I did. The birth-death adjustment is their estimate of companies that have started and the number of people they hired and the number of companies that have folded and how many people are losing their job. They do this because that takes a long time to work its way into the actual numbers. Now, how accurate it is, that is up for much discussion. There are people that we know who refer to it as the made-up jobs. And then there's the just true skeptics like me. I don't really know. But I do know this. There is a lot of daylight between A and B, that being the ADP and the household. But the birth-death adjustment added 400,000. So if you look at the minus 350 and the plus 400, the only explanation for that is, well, there are two possible ones. One, it's totally out to lunch. Or two, things are worse than they appear out there. But we had two confirming reports that said they're not worse than it appears. In other words, I'm going to put myself in the confused column here and see what happens next month.
Well, the fact is those numbers never add up. They're always they're always way entirely different.
But at least you generally get a plus or minus sign consistency.
Yeah.
This negative, positive, negative, and by dramatic. That's what leaves me confused. If it were worth more, I would dig deeper into it, but it's easier just to wait and see what happens. And of course, in January, they will redo the whole system again, and then we have to start over trying to figure out what's new in the jobs department. But one thing we do know for sure, oh, by the way, 200,000 people dropped out of the jobs market too. That's not good people. We have a $200,000 increase in population, yet 200,000 more people leave. But remember, and I think Adam first pointed this out as a possibility, and I've been agreeing with him ever since, that when you have 10,000 to 12,000 people a day turning 65, 66, 67, that means that you're having retirements at a huge scale that have to be replaced. So if there's a little blip in people replacing them, then what you're looking at is a temporary downtime probably. But it's true, as we are aging now, there's an awful lot of people retiring. And if this market keeps up, I'll show you an acceleration in people retiring.
Yeah, I think the market over the last 2 years has probably slowed that trend down a little bit. But I think that any kind of, if we did see new all-time highs early next year, perhaps that could accelerate it again.
Yep. People really do put a lot of attention on what the market's doing because, hey, they have to.
Yeah, that's where most of their retirement savings are going to exist. Although I bet a lot of that is moving more towards fixed income right now.
Yes.
So maybe it'll be a little less sensitive going forward if interest rates stay high.
We're de-risking the elderly population. And this is a wonderful thing. And you've been hearing, if you're a regular listener, you've been hearing this from us for a long, long time. Ever since 08, when the interest rates just sort of fell off a cliff, older people have had no choice except to come to people like us and say, how can I make some money? My rollover CDs, they were at 5 and 6%. Now they're at 0.1 and 0.2, and I can't live on that. What do we have to do? We have to put them in the only thing that has a reasonable return, that being the stock market, which is way riskier than 70 and 80-year-old people want to be or should have to be, and now they don't have to be. So they're getting 5 1/4, 5.5 on safe things like treasuries and CDs and big money market funds and so on. And it has made our lives much more tolerable, a heck of a lot more fun. And it has really eased a big burden off of the retired people, and especially the people who are looking at retiring. I think they see things like this and say, okay, we can live with this now.
I mean, so they'll go. Just in our little practice alone, we've grown the fixed income side of the business in the last 2 years by, if it's not double or more, yeah, I'd least. Be surprised.
Yeah.
When you weigh the alternatives now, there is an alternative.
Yeah.
There was no alternative 2 years ago.
The buzzword for long time was Tina.
Yeah.
That there is no alternative. And now there is an alternative.
Yep. I've been buying treasuries and even some corporates now that are
catching up.
Yeah. Well, they're ahead actually in the 2026, 27, 28 years maturities. I think there's better deals in corporates than there is in treasuries, and really quality names too. I mean, you're buying companies that you know are going to be around in 4 or 5 years, and getting plus over 5% returns locked in for that time period. So
yeah.
that's a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I agree. And if you are in the position where you're able to pick and choose your bonds from quality companies, corporates are always more risky than treasuries because the corporations don't have a printing press and the treasury does. But if they're big enough and solid enough, that risk difference is so minimal that using a corporate bond is no problem whatsoever.
Yeah. So you're looking at like in the 2027 time period, treasuries paying sub 4.8, and you can get a really high quality corporate bond paying 5.2 to 5.4%. So to me, that slight premium is worth the extra risk, which is minimal.
Yeah, very minimal. In fact, we were talking about this with a client in the office this week. I'm going to talk about Apple after the break. But when Apple was building their campus out in California, which is going to be about $1 billion, that thing is magnificent. And that was back when people still worked in the office.
Yeah.
So they went out to the markets to finance the thing, and they were looking at additional stock selling from the treasury stock and that sort of thing. And they wound up deciding that they were going to issue debt. So
they actually had a bunch of cash, too. They could have paid for a lot of it.
Yeah, they could have written a check for
just with cash. But.
But they went out and got $1 billion in the bond market because their interest rate on those bonds was going to be 1% tax deductible. What can you say? All right, we'll be right back after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question remains, what percentage of Americans have unclaimed money? You should check it out. I'll tell you how, probably in the fourth section of the show. All right, we're going to talk about Apple a little bit. We're talking about the way they finance their campus and all that. But there's some other stuff going on, and it goes back about to that period, as I recall. As we were sitting here, we're in the second half of year 9 now, and I think this was probably very early on in our gig here at WBOB. We were talking about how Apple was making a fairly subtle, at the time, change with things like Apple Music, Apple TV, that sort of thing. And you could see what was going on there. They were shifting. They had been a hardware company. In fact, they built a $1 trillion hardware company, when you think about it. But they were shifting over to the other aspect of the technology world, that being the services. And our comment at the time was, you watch. This is going to grow and grow. How many Macs can you sell? How many iPhones can you sell to the same person every month? Well, point something, because you only buy one every several years, maybe. But if it's Apple Music or Apple TV or something, you can collect a few bucks every month from all these people. And what happened in not that large a time, really, was that it was a $2 trillion company. It was based half on the revenues and profits from hardware, and the other half was on the services. Well, they issued their quarterly results again, and the idiots who write headlines, and you know who they are. And my wife, a journalist, always taught me a long, long time ago, people who write the headlines aren't the people who wrote the stories. So the headline people go out there and they try to get something that'll get clicks and reads and all that stuff. But anyway, Apple services revenue climbs in Q4 despite company-wide revenue decline. Well, yes, they did have a company-wide revenue decline. But what they never mentioned in the headline, they had a record profit. Now, what's more important, your gross revenue or your net income?
I mean, well, for valuation purposes, definitely your net income. But yeah, you still want to see a healthy top line, yeah, and you want to see year-over-year growth as well.
Absolutely. But what's really growing now is the the earnings per share were up 13%, but you're seeing the revenues steadily grow. And if you think about it, Microsoft's doing the same thing. You know, who buys software nowadays? You rent your software for the most part. And Microsoft saw the same trend happening, and they are now the aren't they like the one or two biggest company out there? I don't remember if they're flirting with Apple or whatever.
But it's up there. Yeah.
But they're very, very profitable right now, as is Apple. And I just wanted to say one thing. We nailed it. Oh, no, that wasn't what I was going to say. But we did. Now, this company, probably the most common thing you heard after the death of Steve Jobs was that there will never be another one. And it's probably, you know, the beginning of the end of the company and all that. You say what you want to about Cook, but man, is he running a good ship over there. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing a lot of things that are delinking from China. Long run, that's good for Apple, and it'll be good for us here. So good for him. Yeah, I hesitate with some of the people that we disagree with philosophically about so many things, But when you've got somebody who is that adept at what they're doing and producing results, because everybody owns it. So if you've got QQQ or anything like that in your portfolio, you own Apple.
Trust me.
So what's good for Tim Cook is good for Steve and Adam and most of the people who are listening to our voices right at the moment.
For sure. The guys, they really were worried that Apple was dead when Steve Jobs passed, and that has not been the case
at all.
That's
a bet I wish I had taken. Big time.
Yeah. Speaking of people we disagree with philosophically, did you see who Florida's newest resident is about to be?
Yes, I did. And he had a big bookstore once upon a time.
Yep.
Well, yeah, we welcome Mr. Bezos as a newest Floridian.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's just to be closer to his parents, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, nothing to do with taxes quality of life.
Come on.
Anything like that.
The difference between, well, Washington State doesn't have an income tax, do they?
I don't know, honestly. I just assumed that they did because they're just like that.
There's something about Washington that surprised me. And I thought it was that they didn't have an income tax. Anyway, we'll welcome him to spend his money around here. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
I was not familiar with the island.
Oh, no, that is one of the states without an income tax.
Okay. They all get you somewhere, you know that, including us. But are you familiar with the island that he went to? It's not Fisher Island. It's
Star
another
island?
One like that.
Is it Star Island or?
I don't know. I don't think so.
One of the ones off of Miami.
Yeah.
Between the beach and the downtown.
There are. Let's just say you could knock on a door and it would be answered by a name brand.
Yeah.
No surprises out there at 50 million.
Probably answered by the help, actually.
Well, yes, in the name of.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's kind of interesting. And why not? You don't have to agree with everything. If he wants to spend his money making Florida more prosperous, God bless him, I say. All right, we talked a little bit about the fiduciary rule last week, I believe it was. A lot of people know what a fiduciary means. We, of course, are. It's someone who has to place the client's interests ahead of their own. That may sound onerous to some people, but it's not, because we have found over the decades that by doing so, everybody gets happy. You know, I have an old expression. Actually, I have a million old expressions. But I have one about this kind of thing. It says, a good business deal is when everyone walks out smiling. Well, that's kind of what it's like to do a job like we do, where you're acting as a fiduciary. Everyone's happy. Then the corollary to that, of course, is that a good political deal is when no one walks out smiling. Well, we don't see enough of those. We give in too much. I'm getting texted. I wonder what that's all about.
I did want to note that, well, there is no state income tax in the state of Washington. Seattle does have a 10.25% sales tax. 6.5% goes to the state, and the rest go to Seattle and King County.
Okay, well, my crack research department, who I recently referred to as my wife, Indian Creek Island for...
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with that one.
I'm surprised. You'd think an enclave of that sort of magnificence for people who've lived down here a long time would be somewhat more well-known. Not so. Anyway, again, welcome. What can you say? Let's see. The fiduciary rule, this... I don't know what you'd call this one, a preliminary, I guess. They have a real problem here. They have a good idea, and that good idea is to eliminate excessive fees and commissions and so on. They're really kind of targeting the index annuity business here. And I will tell you, those commissions on index annuities are the reason that people sell them. The reason people buy them is not because they go out and look and say, wow, that's cool, I want one of those. They're just hyped and oversold and pushed like crazy. And then when you get into it, there are more terms and conditions and tricks and fees than you can possibly imagine. And if you were a big enough fan of the show to know of or know about our friend Stan the Annuity Man, Stan has a great book that you can get for free by going to annuityman.com. Anyway, but he has written a series of books on this type of thing. One of them is on index annuities. And when you read it, you'll find out that when you are listening to an advertisement for these things, you are getting the wool over your eyes big time. So they're trying to regulate that, and I'm all for it. The problem is the annuity business is huge. As Stan always says, they didn't get those big buildings by giving everything away. And they're very influential on K Street. And that means they buy the right congressman, and this will get watered down again and again and again. And we'll just have to see what happens now. The other thing they're targeting is one-time rollovers. So those of you who are either already with an advisor or are thinking about it, those of you who are in the TSP or have a 401k or 403b or anything like that, when it goes to the time when you're leaving your employment, there are new requirements for advisors to understand and present all the various sides of the rollover itself. In other words, you can't justify a rollover by saying that way we can charge you money. It has to be for good reason. That's the bad news. Here's the good news. There are lots of good reasons to roll it over, and we know all of them. So when it comes to that, if you are dealing with someone or about to deal with someone, and A, they're not a fiduciary, all you got to do is ask, and they have to tell you, don't do business with them. But if they suggest a rollover, and you ask them, well, why is that better than sticking with your 401k or TSP? There better be an answer for it, because it's not true in all cases, but it's true in a vast majority of cases. So that's what you'll learn if you decide to come and see us, which you could easily do by calling 904-685-1505 or going to VanWeFinancial.com, and you can actually schedule a free appointment right there on the website. Lots more to come. We've got to take one more little break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about free money and stuff like that. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. See you in a minute. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are going to the phones. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm glad that we have cooler weather.
Yes.
Down here in Jacksonville.
Yep.
Yeah, what I'm perplexed about, though, is all these years that I believe I followed things, with the world in such a precarious position of geopolitical events heating up, things going on in our country, I'm surprised that the market is doing so well, unless the fact that Mr. Powell has paused the interest rate increase and there possibly won't be any more, supersedes any geopolitical events?
It's the market is not always connected to how you feel about the world.
Okay.
And that's the market looks at what businesses are going, how profitable businesses are going to be in the future. And short term, it may trade on geopolitical events, but long term, people are running analysis on the future profitability of companies and figuring out what that cash flow is worth to them and what the price of the company should be. So that's really what drives the market. And so what this week was about should be the fact that businesses are still trying to grow their profits every year, and we think that next year, or the market thinks that next year may not be as bleak as what the current political and worldwide situation might be. It's hard to disconnect the two in your mind sometimes, but that's what the market exists for.
I agree with that. It's just in the past, at least in my opinion, it seemed that I thought gold and commodities in general would do better when there's things heating up all over the place, or like oil but they seem to be subdued somewhat.
The problem there is that they're delineated in dollars, and the dollar has been on a tear. That reversed this week. So if you're thinking of looking into some gold, silver, oil, whatever shares, I would start taking a really good look, because if the dollar continues to slide again, and we think now with the interest rates having peaked for all intent and purposes, that the dollar will start a little downward journey, that will crank up the price of gold. And you're seeing already, the 2000 was kind of the hurdle that it had to get over, and it's done it a couple times. It poked its nose above 2000. And I think one of these times it's going to go there and then go a little bit further. Plus, if you Google this, central banks around the world buying gold, you're going to find that they are snarfing up more gold quieter than you can possibly imagine.
A couple more things on that, too. Commodities have done pretty well over the last 3 years. In 2021, they were up 42%.
Yeah.
In 2022, they were up 19%. This year they flatlined, but last quarter they were the only thing that we could find that was up, and they were up big, about 10%. So there has been some periods of outperformance in commodities recently, but when you see the price of oil drop from 100 to 80 in any given quarter, it's unlikely you're going to see commodities, the basket of commodities, gain in value with oil causing that much of a downtrend.
Yeah, plus other things like lumber in the commodities arena, and there's copper and all kinds of things. They shot up so high in COVID, and then they've been drifting down since. So the trend line is still downward on the slope. It will find a bottom, and I think it'll find the bottom pretty soon, especially, as I say, if the dollar keeps on its trend right now, it should be very good for gold and other commodities.
I appreciate that. Also, very quickly, you gentlemen talk quite often about the Secure Act 2.0.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is fortunately or unfortunately. I guess I should thank God I be in the position. Next year in September, I'll be 73. Mm-hmm. And if I am assuming correctly, that's when I start have to paying back or at least taking out some of that deferred comp from New York in the 457 and 403B plan.
You are assuming correctly.
Go ahead.
No, I just say, you said if you're assuming correctly, and you are.
Okay, thanks. So I called up to get an application, and I looked at the actuary table, for my situation. So the custodian for the New York City 457 plan and all of that is Voya. And the gentleman told me, oh, don't worry, we'll figure all that out for you when the time comes. So I'm assuming that's correct, that I don't have to do the calculations?
That's correct.
If you're annuitizing.
Your custodian will figure out your what your RMD is.
Right.
And you were lucky. The Secure Act actually gave you an extra year reprieve on having to start doing that. So
true.
That's
very
nice.
True.
The custodian does calculate that based on your year end balance for this year. And they'll send you a figure, and that's just that's the minimum. You can take more in most cases, unless you're doing an annuity like you mentioned. But yeah, if you're just withdrawing, they'll tell you how much you absolutely have to take out to avoid a lowered penalty of only 25%
and 10% if it's corrected in a timely manner.
Right. So that was also Secure 2.0, right?
Mm-hmm. It's okay. Down from 50%.
Yeah.
That's not inconsequential.
Yeah, I saw that in Barron's. This week's Barron's mentioned that about they lowered the penalty figures. Mm-hmm.
It was a ridiculous penalty. The highest of all the mistakes you could make, that was the most costly. I don't know of any that were higher.
No, I can't think of anything.
Well, thanks again. It's a great show. I love talking to you guys. I'm going to take a quick shot, if I can, at the trivia.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say 14%.
And you are going to say the right answer.
All right.
It is 1 in 7, and a little quick mental math says that's between 14 and 15, so I made my range 14 and 15, and you nailed it.
Adam, if I may, you know, I remember a few weeks back, because you're involved in a lot of charities, along with your daughter, I believe Taylor is the name?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Is it possible we could donate this one to either an individual who might get perked up by it or a charity that we can give
yeah.
it to?
Oh, we've got
absolutely.
Them, believe me.
We yep. will we'll donate it to the Joe DiWalli Foundation, and they will be immensely grateful, and I will let them know where it came from.
Excellent. Thank you, gentlemen. Have
thank
a great
you.
Weekend.
Yeah, thank
well,
you.
We
That's
appreciate
great.
The call.
Great work. The show is the most informative show on the network. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
Okay.
Take care.
Have a good weekend. Bye.
Nice to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, that was awesome. Thank you. Really, that means a lot.
All right. How to find your money if you're 1 in 7. The unclaimed funds search. The first one people think of is missingmoney.com. And you just go in there and you put your name in and you spell it the right way and then maybe any little iterations on it and keep trying until something comes up. But that's only good if you live in some states. The states that don't use missing money have a different one called unclaimed.org. And you do exactly the same thing when you go there. Just type your name in and it'll hunt through all kinds of things. Now, for people who've had an FHA home loan, the HUD, the department, may be sitting on some money for you. And you can find that out by going to HUD.gov and search for your name. Finally, if you're one of those Credit Karma users, Credit Karma is a free service and a very reputable one as far as I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah. It's completely legit.
And they have a thing called Credit Karma Unclaimed Money. So there's a few of them just to start. Now, if you have an old pension plan or once worked for a place that had one and maybe you've forgotten about it, maybe you lost track of it, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, or PBGC, is a government agency, and they will, if you go there, you can do the same search, pbgc.gov. I checked that out this morning, and it popped right up, real easy. Old 401ks, Missing Participants Program, also under now, this is an addition to the original PBGC, so at pbgc.gov, you can also, not just pensions anymore, you can also look for old 401k, 403b accounts, that kind of thing. And you might just find something there. Old bank accounts. Now, this one, probably to no one's surprise, for this one, you go to FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp. And if you had money at a bank that closed down or you moved and didn't get an account closed out or anything like that, they'll help you trace it back. You can use the FDIC's bank find tool to trace anything in history that, you know, with all the mergers, acquisitions, all that stuff, you can go there. Now, tax refunds, the IRS has a 3-year grace period. You can look around in the IRS and see if you have any returns coming back. And if it's 3 years or less, they will send it to you. But if it's from 4 years ago, they keep it. They're so special, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, they're always going to win no matter what, but just in case. So if you, the biggest way this works is if you did not file a return, but you do a refund, you won't get the refund because they'll only give it to you if you file. So if you had 2018 and beyond, if you had not filed a return, but you think you might have overpaid any money in, then you can just simply go there and find out. Lost savings bonds, billions of dollars in mature savings bonds have never, ever been retrieved, I guess is the word. And go to IRS, Fiscal Service Form 1048, claim for lost, stolen, or destroyed United States savings bonds, and you can find it. So even if you don't know, go to all of these and check it out. It's a good pastime over the holidays. All right, time's up. Sorry, it went very fast. See you next week, same time. This is the Vanley Financial Hour.